It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Welcome back, Governor.
Or should I say, welcome, President.
No. Welcome, Governor, who will work very hard to elect a Democratic president, because if we don't replace Mr. Trump, then we all have to move to a different country. Would be a problem, since we already have a big migration problem on this globe.
What if you wait? You told me. Here's the history of this thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know you will. You told me on this show that you thought that Biden was your favorite. That Biden was the guy that you liked. Then I made the sad mistake of saying to you one day, "Well, Governor, you endorsed Biden," and you said, "No, I didn't endorse him. I like him." Now there are those of us who think that you may be positioning yourself in case he gets out to get in. Can you give me an unequivocal answer to that?
I think you should take those people who think that way with you, and you should find an organization that can do a support group to help people who are chronically cynical and always looking for a deception or an ulterior motive, even when none is presented, and when a person could not have been more honest to you, even at the expense of their own ego. The presidential discussion is flattering. I believe Joe Biden, who hasn't announced for president yet, so everything is a little premature, is an extraordinary individual. I've worked with him. I know him. He's a personal friend. His son, God rest his soul, who is an attorney general with me, was a personal friend. We go back decades. I think he is the strongest Democratic candidate, and I think the goal is to beat Trump. And sometimes you take your ego aside and say, how do I best help the team? And they say, well, you should play shortstop. You say, I really wanted to play first base. They say, well, you can best help playing shortstop. You say, okay, I'll go play shortstop. But how about passing the greatest budget of the past decade?
Okay, let's talk
if
about
not
that.
The best, several decades.
Let's talk about that. There does seem to be a lack of capital projects in that budget. How come?
Oh, interesting.
Oh,
that you would note that.
Mm-hmm.
See, I have to be careful with you because most people I deal with don't really understand the state government or budgets, but you do. We have a $150 billion infrastructure plan, which is the most aggressive infrastructure plan in the United States of America. It follows on a $100 billion infrastructure plan, which was the most aggressive building plan in this nation. And I really believe when they write the history books, they'll look back and they'll say, during the Cuomo administration, they seized the opportunity when federal government wasn't doing anything and other states weren't doing anything to actually rebuild the state, new airports, new roads, bridges, et cetera. The capital projects and the capital budget is not fully included in this budget. That is true. We have more to negotiate on the capital side, and we'll do that in the coming weeks.
Okay. Now,
but a very good, that was an impressive,
you think so?
Catch by you. Yeah. That was impressive.
Now, I have advisors, let me just say that, who are brighter than I am. Okay, so now, let's just say that Speaker Hasty said lawmakers had to hold their nose to pass the budget. That's the budget you just said is the best in history. Quote, this is not a great budget. There's not a lot of happiness in this budget. There are lots of things missing in this budget. This is not one of the best budgets we did. Is he wrong?
Well, where you stand is where you sit.
I
think it was the best budget, that Speaker Hastie has done in his tenure. Why? Because for me, the true test of a government character, really a person's character, is what they do when confronted with the tough ones. The old expression about a legislator is he or she who does nothing wrong. Legislators just tend to avoid tough votes. They want to be liked, they're politicians. So just don't take a tough vote. Don't make people unhappy. Don't do anything controversial. Yeah, but how about the issues that require a difficult vote? Those are the issues that tell you what the person is all about. The gun control issues cost me 15 points in the polls. In the Clinton administration, cost Congress people their jobs in the midterm election. Guns, a woman's right to choose, these are the toughies. And there were toughies in this budget. Criminal justice reform, where ending cash bail, that was a difficult issue.
Yeah, the DAs didn't like it.
DAs didn't like it. Politicians were nervous about it. It looks like you're releasing criminals. It was exactly the right thing to do. When did we write a justice system that said rich people can pay bail and they can leave, and poor people can't pay bail, so they stay?
Well, I agree with that. But what happens, yeah, Governor, when the first guy comes out bailless and kills somebody?
Well, the bail system was not designed to hold poor people. It's the legal standard is flight risk. It has evolved into, well, rich people with a fancy lawyer can leave, and the poor people sit in Rikers Island, which is one of the most inhumane, disgusting government conditions imposed on individuals in this country. Abusive. People sit there for 2 or 3 years. They haven't even had a day in court.
Well, you're right.
You haven't been proven guilty of anything.
Well,
but anyway,
you're right.
Criminal justice reform. Congestion pricing, they've been trying to pass since Governor Nelson Rockefeller, Mayor Lindsay, Mayor Bloomberg tried. Very difficult in Carl Heastie's conference. So from Speaker Heastie's point of view, these were difficult issues. But you know what? He got them done. And that's what leadership is all about. Taking on the tough ones. I say to people, I don't want to know what you did on the easy issues. I want to know what you did on the tough issues that gave you that unease in the pit of your stomach.
Well, wait a second now. The public campaign financing thing, which ends up doing the usual thing, you know, setting up yet another commission instead of doing the right thing here, to study the issue is a punt. And I hear from a very good friend of mine that it comes down to who the ninth member on that commission is going to be as to whether we're having public campaign financing. And frankly, Governor, I don't like what the legislature, and particularly the Assembly and Mr. Hastie, have done here, because I think they don't want it. And they voted for it when the Republicans were in power. Now they don't. There's a question there somewhere.
You should raise this issue in your overly cynical support group.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just another commission.
Yes,
which I agree. We've had enough commissions that do reports that sit on a shelf. This is a commission that comes up with a law that becomes effective at the end of this year, unless within 20 days the legislature comes back and passes a new law, which is chances of that happening are 1 in a million. The vote is 2 for the Senate, 2 for the Assembly, 2 for the governor, 2 for the minorities, and they pick another person. It's not a report. They will come up with a law, and it is fairly balanced. As a matter of fact, the governor has less power than in the normal lawmaking process, because I have no veto here. And we will have a public financing system.
So who's the ninth person going to be?
Now, by the way, public financing is another one of those tough issues. It's not, I'll bet you it's not 50-50 in the Assembly.
That's right, because those guys, that's right. Sorry for interrupting. I would never want to do that. But those guys got elected the old way. Why would they want the new way? They've been able to push it off on the Republican Senate when they were there, but now they got to face the music, and Hastie's got to carry the water for them.
Well, that's the Assembly and the Senate, my friend. And you're right. They've gotten away with murder. They can go to a press conference and say, I'm going to light my hair on fire unless there's public financing. But nobody really believed it was going to happen. What I did was say, oh, really? You have all those press conferences? You're going to have all the theatrics? Okay, we're going to actually have public financing. Now, look, I originally, years ago, didn't support public financing either. Why should the public pay?
Well, you're very good at fundraising.
But it's not that. I just have gotten to a point where I think the turnover is good, and I think there's such lack of trust in the system that this is a way to make people feel that their contributions are more impactful and restore trust. And hopefully we get some more talent, frankly, and more people who understand government and want to use it as a vehicle to make a change rather than just politics, politics, politics.
Will this be
These
part of your
people are talking with no knowledge about what they're talking about.
Will this be part of your presidential platform when you're running, when Biden steps aside?
You are a dog with a bone, my friend, a dog with a bone.
Okay, I want to move on. Why didn't marijuana get included in the budget? Now, let's go back here. You used to be against it. You talked about a gateway drug and all the rest of it. Then you changed. You said Massachusetts is going to eat our lunch tax-wise. New Jersey, which just screwed it all up and isn't having it, are going to eat our lunch. But now you're for it. How can you explain the fact that you used to be against it and now you're for it?
Evolution. Look, I am a relatively middle-aged, advanced middle-aged, somewhere in there person.
Yeah.
I was a former district attorney. I'm a parent of three young women who I'm trying to help through the perils of youth. And yeah, look, I grew up in a generation where you know drugs. That was a bad thing. No alcohol. Don't drink and drive. Drunk driving. God forbid you smoke a joint and you get behind the car. I had sleepless nights waiting for the daughters to come home. You can't sleep until you hear that doorknob open. So, yeah, I started from a different position. Life moves on. Facts change. I changed my opinion. We will get marijuana done. It's not a question of political desire. It's a question of practical reality of how you put the new system in place, which, Alan, is not easy. You still need to control and regulate. You don't want 14-year-olds having access to marijuana. So how you do it is, frankly, the tougher part of the equation.
So how do you
and
do it?
In the rush of the budget, we couldn't do it intelligently. And we have a whole rest of the session. So I said, we can sit down. We have to do that. We have to look at prevailing wage, which I think is a legitimate issue. But it's not that there wasn't a political desire to do marijuana. There actually wasn't the time to do it. And look, I laid out an agenda last December of 20 items. I basically said, just before my inauguration, you know, the world is spinning out of control. We have climate change. We have real economic problems. The federal government is assaulting us. Our revenues are down. You have this new political extremism where everybody has a 100% opinion, but nobody has any facts. This is tough. And I laid out a 20-point agenda. Frankly, the most aggressive agenda I've ever laid out. We have done all of it but one, which is marijuana, and that is, frankly, because we didn't have the time to do it right, in my opinion.
Okay, the 2% tax cap is being made permanent. This is a huge win for you, right?
Amen. Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. Yes.
Yes.
Look, we're right. Under assault. The federal government is raising our taxes. Property taxes are the highest tax in the state. not state income tax, which we also reduced this year, by the way, that nobody noticed because we did so many things. We reduced the state income tax for the middle class up to $300,000. But property taxes are about three times what your income tax is. So, and then the federal government says we're going to raise it. So giving people the confidence and the stability, it will not go above 2% a year after all those years where it went up astronomically and in an abusive way. When you raised property taxes 6, 7, 8% every year, it was abusive. People's income wasn't going up that high. The house value wasn't going up that high. My bank account wasn't going up that high. And you're going to raise my taxes 6, 7, 8% every year. Where was I supposed to get the money?
I got it.
It was why people are disgusted with government, and they think it's arrogant and abusive, because it can be.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, no, you shouldn't be sorry. I just have so little time to ask you so many questions, and so that's my problem here. Now, you have the nation's second plastic bag ban. Of course, the other state of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, had it before you do. And you got criminal justice reform, you get congestion pricing, and an increase in education spending. So I want to ask you a question. You're upstate New York, you take your car, you're going to Brooklyn. You get on the West Side Highway, and you go through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. Do you pay the price?
Yes. What this has done, quote-unquote congestion pricing for New York City, it, in many ways, first and foremost, equalizes the tolls of everybody going into Manhattan. For those people who don't live there, there are some bridges that are free, some bridges that you pay a toll. It steers all the traffic to the free bridge, obviously. And there was never a rationale for it. It was just political ineptness and political controversy because the local politicians, nobody wants to increase a toll. That's why when you said, I said Carl Heastie, this was one of his finest jobs of leadership. He has all those members down there. You say toll increase. A politician says no. That's what they say. That's the knee-jerk reaction. You say, well, this is just fair. This will actually reduce congestion. By the way, we have to fund the MTA, and how are we going to do it? If not tolls, we'd have to increase fares 30%. Yeah, those are the facts, but they don't want to hear the facts. They just don't want to take a tough vote. And he got tough votes done. And look, he could have said to me as speaker, this one is too tough. I don't want to go to my members with a tough vote, which many speakers have said to me and most legislators say to me on a daily basis. So that's why since Rockefeller, Lindsay and Rockefeller, and every elected since has tried to do this openly or quietly, and we actually got it done.
The plastic bags, you want to talk about that for a second?
Home run, finally. Those plastic bags, they are terrible. Environmentally, they're terrible. You go into our cities, you see them hanging in the trees like bizarre Christmas ornaments. You know, in the rich communities, they send a person out with this stick to pull down the bags. In the poor communities, they just hang there until they deteriorate. And by the way, they don't deteriorate. They're in ponds, they're in rivers, they're everywhere. They're totally unnecessary. I tried to do this for years, and we finally got it done. And also, by the way, you have a little edge in your voice when you talk about that Massachusetts did it first.
Yeah, well, not Massachusetts, Great Barrington did it first.
Okay, Great Barrington.
Not Massachusetts.
You seem to have a reverence for Massachusetts that you don't have for New York, which is a little disturbing, frankly.
I see. Really? Okay.
It annoys me as the governor of New York. I get defensive. I'm competitive. And I'm sensitive.
You?
Yes, a little bit. I'm competitive and I'm sensitive. You don't see me as a sensitive soul. I'm very sensitive and defensive about New York. So when someone tries to suggest there's a better state somewhere, yeah, I get protective.
I hear you. Even if you're wrong?
Yes, I still get protective.
Okay. Now, what about that $25,000 a plate fundraiser?
Even if you're wrong, I like that.
What about that $25,000 a plate fundraiser with your budget director present right before the budget? What campaign were you raising money for? Now, are you raising money to run for president? You're going to do a fourth term? What's the deal?
obviously I'm running for president. That was a presidential fundraiser.
So what is that 25? What's the justification for raising all that money and doing it right before the budget? It's unseemly.
I actually had a reporter ask me, "You was that fundraiser for president?" I said, "Well, it would be the first time anyone ever used state campaign limits to run for president."
What are you going to do with all that money? I mean, that's a lot of money. What are you going to do with it?
I am going to...
Are you running for a fourth term, yes or no?
I haven't slept in 5 days doing this budget. You think you could show me a little professional courtesy?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, at least you're honest. The fundraiser is by state limits, so it can't be used to run for president or for mayor. I use it to help do my job. I will run commercials to help pass a budget. I will run public information campaigns. This is congestion pricing. This is why we should reduce taxes. And I am not running for president. I am governor, and I have my only plan now is to serve as governor. And then, good Lord willing, 3¾ years down the road, we'll see where we are. But I would want to be in a position, if the people would have me, to run for re-election.
Okay, I'm almost out of time, so I got to ask you this.
Or I'm going to be a radio commentator and harass the bejesus out of people on the radio.
You'd be good. You'd be very good for that. Now, your aide, my former student, who I really liked, Rich Azzopardi, called 3 young lawmakers effing idiots about a position that they took. Did you let him know that that was unacceptable?
Did you teach him in class when you had him that even when you get emotional, you shouldn't, there's a decorum that must be maintained?
Don't remember. I don't remember what happened yesterday.
I think you need, that wasn't a necessary part of your education. And maybe you could make the correction to the curriculum. The emotions run high, I get that. My emotions run high also. I think it's very important that we maintain a civility and a decorum and a respect, a mutual respect. We can disagree, but there has to be a mutual respect. And that is, we have zero tolerance for that. And Rich knows that. Yes.
You told him. Because those people think you cut them loose to do that. One of those people is me.
9 years. Have you ever heard anyone use that language?
No.
And look, forget this. This was silly, what these, this issue. But I mean, on more serious issues, have you ever heard anyone who's worked for me?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you for at least being fair.
And you've had reason to do it.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, I've had you. I have a list of reasons. And as soon as I'm out of office, I'm going to go back, right?
I'm not taking your call when you're out of office. Okay, so you got 1 minute. What's the number one priority for the rest of the session?
We have to work on the marijuana issue, prevailing wage issue, rent regulations would be at the top, and more of my job is an operational job, actually making things happen. You know, getting laws passed is part of my job. I have to get to work on the MTA management reforms, upstate economic development projects that Amazon loss hurt us. It hurt our credibility. Corporations don't know if they can trust us anymore.
Yep.
After that offer was scuttled in a total political fashion. So
Senate
I get
Democrats.
Back to operational work. I also take a little bit of a break. I have to take my mother to dinner. I haven't seen her in a while. I have to fertilize the lawn. I have to go spend some time with my kids, who I haven't seen in the past few weeks. And I have to go advertise that it is fishing season, trout season, big tourist engine for upstate New York. Maybe you'll come with me. Do you fly fish,
I would love
doctor?
To go in a canoe with you. Listen, we're out of time.
Our guest has been New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Governor, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks, Doc.